In the parsha of Lech Lecha, we begin to discuss our avos, starting, of course, with Avram Avinu. And in addition to being the focus of Parshas Lech Lecha, Avram is also the focus of two Mishnayos in Pirkei Avos, in the fifth perek. And the first time he's mentioned, and the Mishnah tells us, Asara Doros Minoach Vad Avram. As we began with the 10 Doros from Adam to Noach, we then proceed with the 10 Doros from Noach to Avram. Interestingly, to point out for those who keep a watch for these things, which should be all of us, the 10 generations from Adam to Noach include Adam and Noach. They are numbers 1 and 10. The 10 generations from Noach to Avram begin after Noach. And with regards to Avram, it says, "Shekol ha'doros hayu machisenu boy," and all the generations were progressively getting worse and worse. Ad shebo Avram v'kibol sechar kulam. And so Avram came and received reward for all of them. V'kibol sechar kulam. And the question that Mefarshim ask, of course, this is in contrast to Noah, where ad sheb behavior aleim es hamabel, and that's how that Mishnah ended. But with Avram, shekibol sechar kulam. And an interesting shaila is, why is Avram mekabel sechar kulam? Why does he get the reward for all of them? We understand that those 10 generations, or the vast majority of those 10 generations, forfeited their reward. But how does it come to be that Avram receives their reward? It seems unlikely that it was just a shame to have reward lying there for no one to take it. No one else was eligible, so Avram got all of it. I mean, Avram gets reward for the things that Avram does. So the 10 generations, so they did not make the grade. But why does Avram get their reward? And there are many Mefarshim who say that when the Mishnah says, Avram Avinu kibel schar kulam, received reward for all of them, it means schar keneged kulam, corresponding to all of them. And what is the meaning of that? Lefum tzar agra, we say, that's the Mishnah elsewhere in Pirkei Avos, commensurate with the effort, is the reward for a mitzvah. The more godless one's surroundings, and the more depravity one is surrounded by, the harder it is to be a tzaddik. One cannot compare a good deed done from within a good environment, although, of course, we always search for a good environment. We're not looking for those type of difficulties. But a person who comes through from within a bad environment, every good deed that he does is all the greater for that. All of the 10 generations, their distinction is that they made it progressively harder for anyone to be like Avram Avinu. And if at the end of those 10 generations, someone emerges and he is on the stature of Avram Avinu, his reward takes into account every single person who made it that much harder for him to act as a tzaddik. And that is what it means when it says, Avram kibel sachar keneged kulam. So if we look upon them in a benign, oblique way, they were at the very least meshamish the tzaddik, Avram Avinu, by creating his sachar all the greater, by making it harder for him to be a tzaddik in the first place. Sachar keneged kulam. There is a fascinating comment of the Sforno. The Sforno has a perush in Pirkei Avos. There's a separate work of the collected writings of the Sforno. And he explains that when the Mishnah says there were 10 generations, ad shebo Avram Avinu v'kibel sachar kulam. And he got sachar for all of them. And our question was, why should Avram get sachar for all of them? And the Sforno explains that actually when the Mishnah says v'kibel sachar kulam, it's not talking about Avram. The previous Mishnah, from Adam to Noah, says that after 10 generations, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought the flood. And he is yet the subject of the next Mishnah. And when it says that after 10 generations, Avram came, the kibbutz sachar kulam, says the Sforno, means HaKadosh Baruch Hu received sachar kulam. That is to say, it was worth the wait. It was worth all those generations for Avram Avinu to come out. Kibel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Sachar Keneged Kulam. So, These are the Mishnah's introduction to Avram Avinu. And of course, as we take a look at Avram from the beginning, we commence with Lech Lecha. And I would like to consider the section of Lech Lecha through the eyes of both the Ksava Kabbalah and the Malbim. And we'll ask a couple of very simple questions, beginning with Lech Lecha itself. Perik Yud Beis Pasuk Aleph. Vayomer Shem al Avram, Lech Lecha, Me'artzecha, Umimoladetecha, Umibeis Avicha. So he is to go. To go from your land, from your birthplace, from your father's house, El Aretz Asher Arecha. And the first simple question is that if we envisage a person leaving, so that the order of in which he leaves things would be reversed. Because as he travels, first he takes leave of his father's household, and then he takes leave of his birthplace, and then as he goes further, finally he takes leave of his country. And therefore, one could have imagined, the Pasuk said, Lech lecha mi beis avicha umi moladetecha umi artzecha, which of course the Pasuk didn't say. But why did it phrase it in the reverse? That's question number one. And number two, if we take a look at Pasuk Dalet, Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem, Vayelech itolot. So Avram went. Avram ben chamesh shanim shivim shana b'teisa mecharan. He was 75 years when he left. So Avram went. Next pasuk. Vayikach Avram es sarai yishto ves lo benochi ves koruch hoshama sherachoshu. He takes all his people. He takes all his possessions. Ves hanefesh asher asu b'charan. Vayetzu l'leches Eretz Kanan. And they left to go to Eretz Kanan. Vayavo Eretz Kanan. It sounds like Avram left twice. I mean, he's already gone in Pasuk Dalet. And then Pasuk Hei starts from the beginning again. So why the two Psukim, which are essentially talking about the same thing? And it's for this reason that these Mefarshim and others, but we focus on the Ksava Kabbalah and the Malbim, explain that when we talk about a person leaving home, really, or leaving a place, there are really two capacities in which he can leave. There's the physical journey, of course, the geographical journey, moving from A to B. But when a person moves away from a place, there's also an emotional journey, because as long as he is in a certain place, he is surrounded by that atmosphere and influenced by his environment. And as he moves away, he moves away from that influence. And what's interesting is that the order in which you leave the various spheres of your surrounding will be reversed depending on what type of journey, of aspect of the journey we are focusing on. That is to say, from the physical, geographical point of view, of course, you leave the inner part of the sphere first. Physically, first you leave your parents' house, then you leave your neighborhood, then you leave your country. That's clear. But interestingly, from an emotional point of view, it's reversed. Because the person is most impacted and most imprinted by their parents' house, much more, and then secondarily by their environment, and thirdly by the country generally. Which means that as you leave emotionally, the first thing and the easiest thing to leave behind is the country at large. You'll stop celebrating their Independence Day, and you'll stop hanging their flag out, and these are easy things to drop. From your community, those things are harder to jettison, and hardest of all, of course, are the things from your own house, the house in which you grew up. The Nisoyan of Lech Lecha, and there's a great deal of angles to this Nisoyan, but it exists and contains both of these capacities. And moreover, not only does it have both of them, but there is certainly room to say that the dominant feature, the dominant aspect, is the emotional aspect. For Avram Avinu to essentially leave behind all of the harmful and negative influences of his present surroundings. That is equal, if not more, important than the physical journey. And because that's true, that is why the Pasuk orders the places that he leaves in keeping with the emotional journey. Now, firstly, me'artzecha, firstly from his country, then mi'moladetecha, then his neighborhood, and then mi'beisabicha. Even though physically it was reversed, he left his father's house first, but emotionally it will be the last to go. And there is confirmation for this analysis to be found in the Medrash Rabbah, because Rabbi Yitzchak in the Medrash in Brachos Rabbah adduces the pasuk from Tehillim with regards to the Nisayon of Lech Lecha, which states, "V'shichachi amech uveis avich." Forget your nation, forget your father's house, says Rabbi Yitzchak. That's Avram Avinu. That's what Lech Lecha is all about. And here we have a confirmation of two aspects. Number one, that the journey is as much about forgetting and leaving behind influences as it is changing places physically. That's number one. And number two, we note that even the Pasuk in Tehillim, which is the proof text for this idea, mentions first Amech and then Beis Avich, because when it comes to forgetting, you forget Amech before you forget Beis Avich. Once we perceive within the Nisayon of Lech Lecha these two aspects, it is possible to say that this is why Avram's journey is described twice, in Pasuk Dalet and in Pasuk He. Vayelech Avram, kasher diber elav Hashem. It's very abstract. It doesn't talk so much about taking things, but he went. That's the first aspect. The halicha in terms of the emotional journey. The second pasuk already gives us physical details. Who did he take, and his possessions, and where they left, and where they came to. And that's already the geographical aspect. So pasuk Dalet and He represents the dual nature of the journey of Lech Lecha. And this will bring us to a very interesting point. Namely, if we look at both of these psukim, Dalet and He, we will discover that in addition to Avram, there is someone else who is mentioned in both psukim. And that is Lot. Pasuk Dalet, Vayelech Avram kasher diber elav Hashem, Vayelech ito Lot. So Lot went with him. Pasuk He, Vayikach Avram es Sarai ishto, ves Lot ben Achiv. So Lot went twice. Which is interesting. Because if Lot went twice, then that sounds like Lot was part of both journeys. So it seems. If Pasuk Dalet is the spiritual journey, shall we say, the emotional journey, Lot is there. Lot went with him. Vayelech ito Lot. Physically, Vayikach es Sarai ves Lot ben Achiv. And that is important to bear in mind as we come to consider a very well-known comment of Rashi a little bit later on in the Parsha, Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Yud Dalet. What's happened? There's been a bit of an altercation between Avram shepherds and Lot shepherds, which is a nice way of saying there's an altercation between Avram and Lot, and they part ways. And Lot goes to Sodom, and then Pasuk Yud Dalet. Vashem Amar Lavram. Acharei parted Lot me'imo. So after Lot has parted from Avram, Hashem says, pardon me, after Lot has parted from Avram, Hashem says to Avram, Sonoinechu re'emen amokam asher atasham. Lift up your eyes from where you are, Tzafon of Anegwa, Kedma of Ayama, Kies Kol Aretz, Asher atarael lechoet nena ulezaracha adolam. All of this land will be given to you and to your descendants forever. Besamtia zaracha kathara aretz, and kumis halech ba aretz. And you have these four psukim of communication between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Avram. Okay. Rashi comments on the words acharei hiparet lot. Kol zman shaharosha imo, hayahadibu porish mimenu. That's it. And if there's other words, they're not from Rashi. As long as Lot was with him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't speak to him. Lot's presence was an interfering presence. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not talk to him when Lot is with him. Ad kedei kach. And we should note, by the way, I mean, Rashi's comment here is not so much an observation of what the Pasuk is saying as making sure that we've heard what the Pasuk is saying. Rashi isn't observing that the chronology of events, as long as Lot isn't there, Hashem doesn't talk to him. And as soon as Lot is gone, Hashem does talk to him. Rashi, the Pasuk says more than that. Because the Pasuk makes a point of saying, Lot having just left, Acharei hiparid Lot me'imo. The Pasuk stresses that this communication was after Lot had left, even though it just described Lot leaving. So the Pasuk itself wants to tell you that it was only after Lot left that Hashem would speak to Avram. Rashi is just making sure that we see that. And what's very interesting is just to see the nuances here, because apparently it turns out that theoretically it must be so. If Rashi tells us, or Rashi's highlighting the fact that the Pasuk tells us, that Hashem didn't want to speak to Avram as long as Lot is there, the implication is that had Lot left sooner, Hashem would have said this sooner. If that's not true, then there's no meaning to the causality. So apparently there's a message that HaKadosh Baruch has been, so to speak, waiting to say. But it hasn't happened yet. It was delayed until Lot left. Says the Be'er Basodeh, one of the great Mefarshi Rashi, quoted last week, this will explain to us, if we're sensitive to the grammar, Vashem Omar El Avram Acharei Parad Lot Me'imo. According to Rashi's approach, there is a problem here. And the reason why is because there are two ways that the Torah will describe an event in the past. The classic way is using the Vavahipuch, Vayomer, Vayidaber, Vayehi, and that's one way. Or it can actually not use the Vav and just use the past tense, Amar, Haya. And what's the difference between them? Rashi has told us in Parshas Bereishis, pretty much from the very beginning, the difference between them is, Rashi indicates, through example, is that the use of the Vav, Vayomer, Vayidaber, means, and then this happened. Meaning, this happened then. The use of the past tense is actually what we would call a past perfect, or a pluperfect. That is to say, this had already happened. Not that this then happened, this had already happened. And that's a key as far as Rashi is concerned. If that's the case, then if we look back at our pasuk, which says Vashem Omar El Avram, not Vayomer Hashem El Avram, which is the norm, that's how our parsha begins, Vayomer Hashem El Avram Lech Lecha. If the pasuk says Vashem Omar El Avram, it sounds like Hashem had already said this. But of course that's impossible, because the very next words in the pasuk are Acharei Parad Lot Me'imo, which says it didn't happen yet. So now you have a conflict between the two messages. Because the word Amar means this had to happen before, Acharei means it didn't happen till afterwards. So how can these two live in the same pasuk? Says the Be'er Basodeh, that's what Rashi is saying. Vashem Amar, the reason why the past perfect is used, implying something that had already happened, even though it didn't happen, is because it should have already happened. This was waiting to happen for a while already, but Lot was in the way. And therefore, you see how the compact nature of the pasuk, how that's communicated. Something that should have already happened was not able to happen until after Lot. That's the full impact of those words. So, we have a problem. If it's true that Lot represents an interfering presence between HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicating with Avram, so let's go back to the beginning of the Parsha. Because in Perek Yud Beis, so Avram has taken Lot with him, and we find in Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Zayin, Vayera Hashem al Avram, Vayomel Lezarecha Etenes Ha'aretz Hazos. Now Lot was with him. He took Lot with him. The Pasuk has told us that twice already. And apparently it was not an impediment, so to speak, to stop HaKadosh Baruch Hu from talking to him. So what happened? Now we should know that the Mizrahi and the Gur Ariyeh, each one in their own way, are dealing with this question. And each one says something of a chiddush. The Mizrahi suggests that it could very well be, that at the beginning of the Parsha, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Avram, Lot's presence isn't in the way because Lot isn't there. Because this is a part of the trip that Avram has taken by himself. Now, why would I say that? Says Mizrahi, because if you look at Pasuk Hey, as they're traveling, once again back to the beginning, Pasuk Hey, Vayikach Avram Misarah Ishto, Veslot Ben Achiv, etc., etc., the Pasuk concludes, Vayetzu'u Laleches Arza Kanan, Vayavo'u Arza Kanan. They leave to go to Canaan, they arrive at Canaan, and the very next words are, Vayavor Avram Ba'aretz. If we note the contrast between everybody arriving in Canaan, but then the Pasuk seems to suggest that Avram is the one who's moving through the land. It could very well be, says the Mizrahi, that what the Pasuk is saying is that there are certain aspects of the trip that Avram took by himself. And where does he go? Ad Mekom Shechem, Ad Elul Mareh. What's he doing there? Rashi says he's offering tefillahs there because Shechem is a very difficult, Avram knows, will be a difficult place for his descendants. And if that's correct, says the Mizrahi, so if Avram is by himself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will talk to him. That's quite a chiddush. And then the Mizrahi proceeds to work through the usage of the singular and the plural as the parsha unfolds. The Gur Arye, actually, in the Maharal, says something quite different. Namely, that it's true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Avram in the beginning of the parsha, even though Lot was there. But the reason is that there were certain things that Avram had to hear, and you can see the difference. That's also an interesting point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message to Avram at the beginning of the parsha is 5 words. That's not a lot for what it was. Lezarecha eten es haaretz hazos. If we would use our terminology, that's strictly business. When Lot leaves, 5 words became 4 psukim. Sana einecha, kilecha lezarecha, vayazarcha kafar aretz, kum lishalech ba'aretz. All of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's talking to him, he's got all the time in the world. Because Lot's not there anymore, so you can speak to Avram in bederech kiba, in a way which is of love, as opposed to the beginning. If there are certain things that has to be said, so Lot will not stop the bare minimum coming through, but it is the bare minimum. So these are the classic responses of the Mefarshei Rashi, Mizrahi, and the Gur Arye, but the Baalei HaTosfos themselves say something else. A very simple response, if our question is, how can Rashi tell us that Lot's presence is an impediment for HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaking to Avram? Was he not there with him at the beginning? And Hashem spoke to him, says the Tosfos, yes. Because in the beginning, Lot's presence was not an impediment. Because in the beginning, Lot was okay. He was a good person, and he was on board with Avram Avinu. There's no problem with Lot per se. As long as Lot, in the words of Tosfos, Osa Sha'a Kosher Haisa, he was okay in the beginning. He soured at a certain point. Yes, by that stage he became an interfering presence, but originally he was not a liability at all. He was part of the team. And it turns out that Lot really isn't doesn't receive primary focus so much in Parshas Lech Lecha. But if we do take a look at Lot, the most important thing to know about him is that he is not static. He is not stable throughout Parshas Lech Lecha. He has ups and downs. And what's more interesting is we can see it in the Psukim. If we follow carefully, it can be discerned in the Psukim. It leaves markers for us as to what became of Lot. And it begins by considering 2 words that are used in Lashon HaKodesh. Perhaps for us, we would use them synonymously. There's no such thing as a synonym in Lashon HaKodesh. The word for if, for with. There are 2 words. The Torah will sometimes say im, and sometimes say es. Now this is something that the Vilna Gaon has discussed, and we've mentioned this a few times. The Ksava Kabbalah takes a slightly different approach to it and explains that whenever you have someone going S, that means that they are together. And in a sense, this resonates with the drosha of the Gemara, because the Gemara actually darshans Essim. There was a famous rabbi in the Gemara, Shimon Amsuni. He was famous for darshaning all the Essim in the Torah. Es always means tofa. When the pasuk says the person should verachatz b'mayim es besoro, says the Gemara, it means his hair as well. Es hatofa lebesoro. The word es always includes something that's tofa, and in a sense, therefore, when you have one person and someone else comes along es with him, that means as a tofel, in other words, as secondary and subordinate to him, along with the same program. Im already represents two people who are equally follow what may be completely different agendas, as much as they happen to be physically together. That's the explanation, both of the Ksava Kabbalah and the Malbim. And now, if we go back and see in the Psukim, the first time we have a mention of Lot, it's in Perikud Beis Pasuk Dalet. And what does it say? Vayelech Avram, kasher diber elav Hashem. And bear in mind, Pasuk Dalet, as per our earlier discussion, is the spiritual part of the journey. That's Shichichi Amechu Beis Avich. Avram went, Vayelech Ito Lot, and Lot went with him. Lot was part of that journey at that time. And that is indicated by the fact that it says, Vayelech Ito Lot. Lot subjected himself to and subordinated himself to the program of Avram Avinu. He is Tofel to Avram. What Avram is looking for, that's what I'm looking for. And where he goes to find it, that's where I'm going. That means he's kosher. Vayelech Ito Lot. At a certain point, things change. And things change for a number of reasons. Firstly, the pot of gold that Lot is looking for, if he's learned Parshas Lech Lecha, Ve'ezechol Lagoy Gadol, Vavorechecha, Vagad L'Shemecha, they didn't find that when they first came to Eretz Canaan. It was tough. The first thing they met when they came to Eretz Canaan was a famine. It's not working out well. But he stays with Avram. And they go down to Mitzrayim, and then Sarah is taken. And it's tribulation after tribulation. And Lot is beginning to wear away his allegiance to Avram. Moreover, something else happens. When they come back, so Paro has given everyone, we'll see later from the pasuk, Avram first and foremost, but everyone else, he's given them a lot of possessions. And that is a distraction for Lot. All of a sudden, he has a new focus. And moreover, and this we should note, Rav Shlomo Fischer points this out, that there's an aspect of frustration for Lot in that what makes Avram so rich and eligible to be the recipient of all these gifts from Paro is that he presented himself as Sarah's brother. Okay, that's very interesting for everyone. It's especially interesting for Lot, who was Sarah's brother. In other words, that whoever became the chaperone got everything. And Lot's meant to keep quiet through all this. But he sees that all the money's coming to Avram, and it just things don't seem to be working out for him. To the extent, if we have a look at the end of Perikud Beis, or more correctly, the beginning of Perik Yud Gimel. Vayal Avram in Mitzrayim. Avram comes up from Mitzrayim. Hu v'ishto v'chol asher lo v'lot imo hanegba. Something has happened to Lot. He is no longer Ito. He is no longer walking in the shadow of Avram. He's come up as a macher in his own right, or at least in his own eyes. V'lot imo hanegba. And the reason why is because v'avram kaved ma'od b'mikneh b'keses v'azahav. Avram has so many possessions. And moreover, if we have a look at Pasuk Dalet, and this is pointed out by the Maisei Hashem, all of these signals from the Pasuk come together. Pasuk Dalet says, al-mekom ha-mizbeach asher asa sham barishona. Vayikra sham Avram b'shem Hashem. Says the Maisei Hashem, Avram is the one that we've been speaking about the whole time. He is the subject, and therefore all pronouns will accrue to him. As surely as it says, El Makom HaMizbech Asher Osa Shom Barishona, the Mizbech that he made. Who made? Avram. Vayikra Shom Avram B'Shem Hashem. The Pasuk states and what it did not need to state. We know that it's Avram. He's been referred to the whole time. So why does the Pasuk state that it's Avram? Because the Pasuk here is stressing. Although at the beginning of the parasha it says Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, without any emphasis added, here the Torah says Vayikra Shom Avram B'Shem Hashem, implying Avram may have been calling B'Shem Hashem. There was someone nearby who was already not calling B'Shem Hashem. As Avram calls out B'Shem Hashem because he is 100% committed to his program, the someone in the choir who's somewhat subdued. And that's Lot. And that leads into Shlishi. And trouble begins. Because now Lot wants the payoff straight away. He demands a chelik in Eretz Canaan. And there's trouble. And in the end he leaves and he goes to Sodom. And all of this, once again, confirmed in Pasuk Yudalad. Vashem Amar El Avram Acharei Hiporit Lot Me'imo. As long as Lot was Imo, there could be no communication. If he's Ito, we can talk. If he's Imo, there's nothing to talk about. And that, through the diukim of the psukim, is confirmation of what the Balei HaTosfos is saying. Originally he was kosher, he soured at a certain point, and the Pasuk gives us the markers to trace that deterioration of Lot, presumably to learn a lesson from it. When we look to emulate the characters in the parashas of Chumash Bereishis, of course, first and foremost, our focus is turned towards Avram Avinu. Everyone wants to be like Avram Avinu, but Avram is a leader. We aspire to be leaders, but there's a lot to be said for being a good follower, and that we can learn from Lot, from his good times, as well as from his bad times. From here, let's come to consider the war with the four kings and the five, which is in Perek Yudalad. And a couple of perspectives, I think, because the facts as they are in the psukim need to be understood. The facts are there was a war, Avram went to war and he won. Over what? And why did he go? And again, we begin with simple questions. Why does Avram go to war? In the natural course of things, he doesn't really stand much chance of succeeding. Presumably, a venture that he sets out on should have a working chance of success. There is no working chance of success here. We can look back and enjoy it, the fact that he won. But going into it, certainly there's no expectation. He goes in with maximally 318 of his Talmidim against four armies. That can't be overemphasized. How can he go in? What is he expecting? And again, the happy ending doesn't explain the beginning. So what is Avram's motivation and what is he looking to attain? So there's a very interesting comment again in the Bereishis Rabbah, and will give us a new angle, a new dimension to this war. And the Medrash raises its own question. Why did the four kings go to war against the five? Now, for us, perhaps that's a non-question. The answer seems to be in the Pasuk. The five were in their servitude to them, and they rebelled. So that's why. But it's not so poshut. Because if we read the Pesukim carefully, we will see in Pasuk Dalet of Perek Yud Dalet, so we've just introduced the four kings, and we've introduced the five kings. Shtei Mesrei Shana, says Pasuk Dalet, Avdus Kedar LaOmer. They served Kedar LaOmer for 12 years. Ushlosh Esrei Shana Marodim. Now, Shlosh Esrei Shana, translated literally, which is the way Rashi takes it, doesn't mean in the 13th year they rebelled. They rebelled for 13 years. That means that they've been rebelling for longer than they've been serving. And 13 years is a long time in politics. Which means that the answer cannot only be they went to war because the five nations rebelled, because they've been rebelling for years and years and nothing's happened yet. So why the timing? Why now? Why in year 14? Well, let's have a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph and Yud Beis. Vayikru, they wage war. Vayikru es kol rechush, Sodom va'amora, ves kol achlam vayelechu. They take all of the possessions and all of the food of Sodom and Amora, and they go. Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayikru es lot, ves rechusho, ben achi Avram vayelechu. Behu yoshev b'Sodom. And they took Lot. Lot is the nephew of Avram. Now, there are two important parts to this observation about Pasuk Yud Gimel. Number one, we don't need the Pasuk to tell us that Lot is Avram's nephew. I mean, we may think best forgotten, but we know that Lot is Avram's nephew. That's number one. But number two, not only does the Pasuk tell us that Lot is Avram's nephew, it really emphasizes it by disjointing the syntax of the Pasuk. For the Pasuk, if we may posit, the more intuitive and smoother way for the Pasuk to go would be to say, Vayikru es Lot ben achi Avram ves rechusho. I mean, that's the way the Pasuk normally talks. They took Lot, Avram's nephew, and his rechush. The Pasuk, if we look again, jars. Vayikru es Lot, they took Lot, ves rechusho, and his property. Ben achi Avram, the nephew of Avram. That's going back to Lot. That means that the Pasuk has made sure that we notice this. It's more than information. Says the Pirkei de Rebbelezer, it is more than information. This is what they went to war for. They're looking for Lot because he's Avram's nephew. It's very interesting to observe, and without placing too fine a point on it, the two disasters that befell Sodom were directly connected to Lot. And he moved into town and the country was invaded. And he became a judge, and within a day the entire city was destroyed. Perhaps there was a cheshbon nefesh to be made there. But in the meanwhile, they go to war because Lot is Avram's nephew, ben achi Avram. And if that's true, then the entire situation has taken on a very different hue, because it's a direct attack against Avram, and it's a confrontation with Avram, and it's really a challenge to Avram. This is a member of your family. We represent everything that is antagonistic to you. And certainly, Lefi Chazal, Amraphel is Nimrod. Nimrod and Avram have their own history, and they're looking to spread their own ideology, and in order to ensure that they have agitated Avram to the extreme, they make a point of taking his nephew hostage. Now, from a certain point of view, that puts a different, there's now a different agenda, because it has overtones now of orchestrum again. The question is, how much are you prepared to give up in order to confront people who are spreading Avodah Zarah and are taking people that are dear to you and imposing their way of life on the surrounding areas? At this point, Avram Avinu goes to war, says the Medrash, and this for me was a chiddush, not necessarily with the intent of winning. He goes to war because he has to go to war. He has to answer the challenge. How much is he prepared to give up in order to represent what and stand behind what he believes? The answer is everything. And that's why the Bereishis Rabbah says, Amar Avram, Eitzei ve'ehareg al Kiddush Hashem. I have no choice. It has become an issue of Kiddush Hashem. They are publicly flaunting their Avodah Zarah and baiting me because I represent the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I cannot not respond to that challenge at Kedekaf. Which means, if we just to answer our original question, what was Avram Avinu thinking, or what was he expecting as he went out to war? The answer is he was expecting to die. He was expecting to be killed, and he accepted that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed a nes for him, that's how it ends. But that was not what Avram Avinu was expecting in the beginning. And This then is the part of the equation that we find from the Midrash. I would say, by way of an additional element, and this is to be found in the writings of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and he himself raises the question, why is Avram, he's risking his life for Lot? Why? So what will we say? Mishpacha, family, could be. Says Rabbi Yaakov, there's more. And he directs our attention to probably one of the most underrated personalities in all of Chumash Bereishis, and that is Haran. Haran is Lot's father. Everybody knows the story with Haran. It's the Haftorah of the story of Orcaste. It's what happened next. So Avram goes in and children come home. Everybody's heard the story. Avram goes into the furnace and he emerges unscathed. Now Haran was on the fence a little bit. He wasn't sure. So he thought, I'll wait it out and I'll see. If Avram dies, I'll know that it was wise for me not to go in. If he comes out alive, so then, okay, in I go. So Avram came out alive. So then they turn to Haran and says, okay, and what do you say? He says, I'm with Avram. So they threw him in and he was killed. Now, I'm not sure what the common notion here is or what the intuitive understanding is, but I do know that when I was younger, the overtones of this story of Haran is that he was a bit of an opportunist and he got what he deserved because he wasn't really committed, and that's what happens. But that's not correct at all. The Chasam Sofer talks about Haran, and the Chasam Sofer says, and for a very simple reason, why we hold him by Avram's standards, as if to say, so if you didn't come out alive, that means that you weren't really serious. Says the Chasam Sofer, if we may say so, most people that enter furnaces don't come out alive, even if they're serious. That's not the hallmark of seriousness. That's not the stamp of approval. And moreover, Haran has the distinction of being the first person in the history of the world to give up his life for Kiddush Hashem. He could have said no. It's quite a thing to say. And he doesn't think that he's on the Madrega of Avram Avinu. He must know that they're different. Haran, again, is not expecting to come out alive. And that gives but that's the reality. It gives an altogether different understanding of what Haran did. He said, I don't know. Why should I know? I need proof. Well, if Avram comes out, that's my proof. If it's my proof, I'll stake my life on it. And he did. And he died. But he died for what he believed in. He's the first person to die of Kiddush Hashem. And says the Chasam Sofer, and that is a schus for him. And wherein do you find the schus? What is Haran? Where's the results? Says the Chasam Sofer, consider all of the four imos of the Jewish people are descended from Haran. Sarah is his daughter. And then through Milcah and Besuel, his granddaughters Rivka, and then by extension Rachel and Leah. That's a schus. He's not the father of the Jewish people, but he had a schus. And therefore, says Rabbi Yaakov, if you wish to understand, and all of these things, they intersect, and they interplay with each other. But if you wish to understand why Avram Avinu is prepared to do so much for Lot, and we've seen through Rashi, if it's a choice between receiving communication from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and putting up with Lot, he'll put up with Lot. He never told Lot to go until Lot started Machlokas with him. But as long as Lot hadn't done that, Avram would keep him on, and if HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't speaking to me, I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do. Because I have an achrayus to Lot. Lot has no father because of me. And he was right. But now I take Lot under my wing. Lot's father offered his life for what I believe in. He followed my example. Lot is not someone just to be left alone. And if I have to carry him a little bit, so be it. That's called achrayus. That's called hakaras hatov. And it reaches its apex as Avram Avinu, when he hears that Lot has been captured, he sees himself as having no choice but to rush towards the war and do what he can to rescue Lot, come what may. And moreover, says Rabbi Yaakov, and this is a much more general comment, and it's very thought-provoking. If we would ask the question halachically, and it is a halachic shaila, was Avraham Avinu obligated or encouraged or even allowed to risk to face what seems to be certain death al derech hateva for the possibility of releasing his nephew Lot? That's a very interesting shaila. Says Rabbi Yaakov, there's a good chance that the answer is no. The halachic answer is no. And that, says Rabbi Yaakov, is why we do not learn halacha from the Avos. And what does that mean? It means that the Avos, we say, Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. The foundation of Torah is Derech Eretz. The 613 mitzvahs are predicated on a foundation of ethical being. As surely as Derech Eretz comes before Torah, so too the Avos came before Torah. The job of the Avos was not to teach Torah to their children. The job of the Avos was to prepare a people that would have the ethical and moral fabric to receive the Torah. And sometimes, in order to instill a certain value, nothing else can be allowed to interfere. And that is Rabbi Yaakov's answer to the famous question, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not give the Torah to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? It's true, we understand. We know from the Gemara and from the Midrashim, they kept the Tariq mitzvahs, right, even though they were not commanded to, as long as they did not interfere with their primary imperative, which was instilling within the very essence of their descendants, Derech Eretz. And that, in fact, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zatzal, number 7, his response to the question as to how Yaakov could marry two sisters, and once again, the specific nature of the question is, the Torah forbids marrying two sisters. It's not forbidden for Bnei Noach. So the question is, why did Yaakov not elect not to marry two sisters? Why did he not volunteer for that part of the mitzvah? Says the Chabad Rebbe, I heard this from a Talmud Chacham, very simply, because he promised Rachel he'd marry her. Now in the meanwhile, he's been tricked by Lavan, and before he knows it, he's married to Leah. So what should he do? Divorce Leah? Why should she suffer? Not marry Rachel now, because he's electing to keep one of the Tariq mitzvahs? Why should Rachel suffer? And therefore, there is no question that Yaakov put on hold this electing to fulfill this particular one of the Tariq mitzvahs, because his primary imperative is to act with Derech Eretz. And his children will get the 630 mitzvahs as binding halacha. That's quite a statement. And that's really the job of the Avos. And that's why, interestingly, the Maram Shik, great Talmud of the Chasam Sofer, Rabbi Moshe Shik, in his introduction to his Perush on Pirkei Avos, raises the question why it's called Pirkei Avos. That's true. What does that mean, it's said by the fathers? It's said by the Tanoim. They are our fathers, yes. So are all of the other 63 Masechtos of Mishnayos. They're all said by the same people. So why are they our Avos here and not anywhere else? Says the Maram Shik, Pirkei Avos, as we know, deals with matters of Midos and Derech Eretz. The substance of Pirkei Avos is about bringing a person and giving them an affinity to the lives of the Avos. The primary focus of the Avos was Derech Eretz Shekodma LaTorah. Pirkei Avos is about Derech Eretz, and that's why it's called Pirkei Avos. It's the chapters of trying to be more like the Avos. Ad kedei kach. And therefore, says Rabbi Yaakov, and he states this explicitly, that one could discuss halachically, and I'm sure it would be a very important and multi-layered discussion. Could he go to war? But that's a discussion that was not relevant at that time. There was a value which is called responsibility for someone who suffered a loss as a result of my what I stand for. I've taken him under my wing. There's nothing I won't do for him. Ad kedei kach. So that's the approach of Rabbi Yaakov to this matter. And perhaps let's conclude by referring to the famous people of Sodom. And it's very interesting, especially after all this, Avram rescues all of them, and then the king of Sodom, as we've noted in the past, ever willing to negotiate when he has no other choice because he's lost everything, says, "Ten li anefesh v'ruchush kachlach." Give me back the people, you take the ruchush. Now, Avram's famous response to that is, "Imi chutvat zrochnal, I'm not going to take a thing." And he didn't take a thing, right? Only what his soldiers essentially were entitled to. Beyond that, he didn't take a thing. Okay. What's interesting is, we should note that Avram, or the king of Sodom, asked him two things. Offered two things. Number one, teni anefesh, give me the people, v'ruchush kachlach, and you take, so I'll take the people, and you take the ruchush. Avram's response only relates to the question as to whether he'll take the ruchush. And the answer is no. But now there's another question. So is he going to give back the people? And the answer to that is yes. Because he did. And they went on to be the people of Sodom. And this is discussed by the Talmud in Maseches Nedarim, which makes an amazing comment. It raises the question, it's discussing the contributing factors to Golas Mitzrayim. And the Gemara says, one opinion of the Gemara, which represents therefore one piece in the equation, is that Avram Avinu incurred the liability of Golas for his children because he neglected to keep the people of Sodom with him. And he sent them back to Sodom. And the truth is, it's fascinating to ponder. We can't presume to fathom what is behind Avram's decision. But the people of Sodom, I mean, they are prime candidates for Avram Avinu's program. They're not going to get it in Sodom, that's for sure. His job is to be Makari people, tachas kanfei Shechina. And here, an entire population has literally landed in his lap. And he doesn't owe the king of Sodom anything, it seems. And he doesn't take anything from him, but he gives him back the people. Rav Meir Chodesh Zatzal, the Mashkiach of Chevron and Teres Yisrael, after that, explained that this will give us insight into what we will find in next week's Parsha, that Avram Avinu bargains and pleads at length for the survival and the salvation of the people of Sodom. It is the longest conversation the Torah records between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is when he is bargaining for the people of Sodom. And it goes blow by blow, frame by frame, 50, 45, 40, and it's a protracted discussion. And part of the question is, why does he bother at all? And Reb Meir said that on a certain level, Avram felt an achrayus for them. Because these are people that he could have taken. Now again, we don't know why he didn't, but he didn't. But nonetheless, Avram Avinu cannot look at them as if to say, well, whatever happens there, it's got nothing to do with me, because he was the one that allowed them to return to Sodom. And therefore, if they're in trouble, Avram Avinu has to put himself out for them. And I believe one may add, as a PS to that thought, this may explain to us another phenomenon. Namely, there is a group of people that when Bnei Yisrael came out from Mitzrayim, they came out with them, and they're called the Eir of Rav. And by all accounts, they gave the Jewish people nothing but trouble. They are a motivating force, if not a guiding force, behind most of the national disasters of the Jewish people, and depending on who you ask, until today. And from a certain point of view, the question is, why did Moshe agree to take them on? Rashi even talks about it in Parshas Kisiso. He says, Lech reid ki shicheis amcha. He talks to Moshe about the Eir of Rav as your people. Rashi says that's the Eir of Rav. The Jewish people are God's people. The Eir of Rav are Moshe's people. Could have sent them back. but he didn't send them back. Why not? Why is he prepared to carry them with all the troubles that they cause? I think based on the Gemara in Nedarim, if there, I'm sure more than one factor, but a factor within the picture is that Moshe Rabbeinu feels he can't send them back. Because they have volunteered to come out, for better or for worse, to the best of their ability, which wasn't very great, to become part of the Jewish people. If he rejects them, having just left Mitzrayim, where the Jewish people were there for a couple of hundred years, because Avram did not keep the people of Sodom with him, so how can you just leave Mitzrayim having paid 200 years for that mistake? And there's another populace that presents themselves, what are you going to say? No? You'd be back in Mitzrayim again. And therefore, I think a great deal of the impetus to carry the Eir of Rav, with all of their difficulties, is as they left Mitzrayim, was a lesson.